The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello again, and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition for this week. We've got same guest we had last week. We didn't quite finish up with Kevin Sebesta from the Rock Retirement Club, having a chat with him about retirement planning issues and approaches, etc. And we kind of left you with a cliffhanger, which we'll pick up on as we get into this show. I did want to make mention, we ended up recording this show several days ago. So if there's been any worldwide events happen that are of substance that you're wondering why we're not talking about, that might be why. So we record this, like I said, several days ago, just to meet everybody's schedule since Jim had to do some traveling. So I'll call Jim and Kevin, actually, back in now, just so we can dive in and pick up kind of where we left off. We were going to talk about how, in Kevin's experience, as he's worked kind of as a coach in the retirement realm and interacting with other like-minded individuals as part of the Rock Retirement Club, how different people approach retirement, and in particular, how they might handle and how did they react to and prepare for volatility, kind of like what we've seen this year with what Jim's been, I don't know if he came up with this, but the tariff tantrum and at least partial resolution on some of it at this point, but I think there's still a fair amount of tantrum to go. And we acknowledged everybody's going to have a little different approach to dealing with these types of things. And so we were going to have Kevin pick up and share his observations with how things have gone with other people. So Jim, was there, before we dive in and pick up with Kevin where we left off, anything else you'd like to share?
No, I kind of came up with tariff tantrum because of taper tantrum. That's what they call the 2022 market correction, if you will, mm-hmm. when the Fed stopped tapering, if you will, and was raising rates. So they called it the taper tantrum. And I just kind of called it the tariff tantrum, but I'm sure other people called it tariff tantrum too. It just kind of rhymes. It goes with the flow, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I kind of like it.
Anyways, so, Kevin, what do you guys at the Rock Retirement Club call what's been happening in the market for the last 6 weeks or so?
I want to say thanks for having me back. I didn't know after our first date if I'd get ghosted and get a second date, but thank you.
Well, we promised everybody you'd be back, so we didn't want to. We kind of painted ourselves into a corner, Kevin. So
far, and in that window, there was no huge earth-shaking stuff yet, even from California perspective, where I'm at right now. So the question about what did the club and its members do and discuss with the temper tantrum? And I want to say it's very similar to a number of the members who went through the spring 2020 volatility. Is part of the Rock Retirement Club is the master class, which is Roger Whitney's formal retirement planning process. put into modules for the members to go through and use the software tool. You guys talked about MoneyGuide Pro, MoneyGuide Elite, which is a professional tool. And the members who choose to go through the masterclass create a plan of record. So they create a retirement plan, their plan of record, and it has the structure on that. And one big piece of that would be what you guys refer to as positioning, to have a liquid, non-equity type strategy for the near-term years. Some people call it bucket one, a three-bucket strategy. Positioning sounds much, much clearer. There's different methodologies that Roger uses for the pie cake to have layers with allocation, like a pie chart. And so a lot of members who are vocal, who join the meetups and or in the topic conversations, talk about they're just using this current position of liquid money, which might be actual cash or even treasuries. There's been a lot of discussion in the past couple of years about using higher interest rate. And they're not products, right? Treasuries, high yield savings accounts. So a lot of people have multiple years set aside in that. So the real gotcha, I think, for most people is transactions. I always say price doesn't matter unless you're buying or selling something. We could go up or down, whether it's a house or a car or one of your investments. And what's personally, so this is a personal piece. When I see club members talk about their investment policy statement says when the market goes down 5%, they will buy in some more of their equities. And some people say, my investment policy says when the market or that asset goes down 10%, I'm going to buy back in. And they have terms like dry powder where they have cash sitting aside. Those are different than the 3 to 5 year cash bucket floor position pie cake layer that Roger talks about. So when you see other members who you've heard them talk before and you know they're intelligent, you know they're intentional, talking about buying something because over time, history has said 65-75% of a year, the years, the market has, the total market, I guess, has ended higher, they're putting those historical perspectives into practice in front of other peer club members, which makes you feel more comfortable that it's not just Warren Buffett saying we're going to buy now, which he's not saying right now, but he did in 2020. So you, that's where surrounding yourself with intentional people, intelligent people, wise people, having your own plan of record and your own investment policy statement all tie together so that you're not panicking. Because on Facebook, they're panicking at different points.
So did you find, as a general rule, or maybe not even a rule, that's probably not the best way of wording it, but did you find any panic, or was this cash reserve position, as I would call it, did that kind of calm people down? Because to me, here in our office, we did see a few people, surprisingly, let their emotions get the better of them, I think. And that's something that I think any good retirement planner attempts to mitigate. The sequence of return risk, which is what happens when markets are going down, you fall victim sequence of return risk, that gets all the attention. But I think the emotional risk, even if you didn't sell in a down market, but you emotionally couldn't bring yourself to spend, I feel that's just as bad as sequence of return risk. From the sense, again, I warn everybody that someday, like it or not, you will be the other guy and something will have happened and you're not going to be able to spend, or at least spend to the degree that you wanted to. And part of my whole reason for coming up with the concept of the fund number and investment positioning is to help deal with that emotional aspect. The solution to sequence of return risk is you don't sell when things are going down. But I also felt, well, that's kind of self-defeating if you're just going to say, okay, markets are down, we can't go do anything fun. It didn't make any sense to me. So did you find, I know what I want to ask, I just don't know how to ask it.
You know what, I have a good example. So I know exactly what you're saying because I'm exposed to real world people who are not clients working with you on advice. We are just having educational or entertainment in my end discussions. And I will share a couple different perspectives. I know people that in all this turmoil were booking cruises just together as groups of friends. That would be me personally, because we had that cash bucket set aside for multiple years. And I do know, I do know another person who's not in the Rock Retirement Club. He's in a different community, large community, who didn't want to upgrade their room on a cruise, a river cruise, because they have a couple of single share company stock that has dropped down because of leadership issues out in the public, we'll say. And they, because their valuation has dropped down, they didn't feel flush with cash to upgrade their room on a river cruise. Whereas others of us who've used this cash structure to set aside multiple years, all of us have retired, the people I'm speaking of. We have this cash structure. So we felt comfortable to spend because we have cash projected out for the next few years in our fund number, our fund bucket. And I think you call it the fun vision, the near-term vision of things you want to do. Whereas they did not. They're early retired, we'll say, and they still have a large base in the equity for future growth, and they did not spend. I do not see that from the Rock Retirement Club, who have a course and an experienced leader saying, this is one way to do it with a 3 to 5 year cash floor set aside. So it depends how you've built your model. If you've built your model off of Monte Carlo that projects out with a high equity position versus pulling some of those equities into more stable assets to be used in nearer term. So I don't see it in the Rock Retirement Club. I don't see it in my friends who follow some of that cash set aside, but in acquaintances who I respect a lot, who have more equity positions, they had to make a non-spending decision this spring.
Interesting.
Yeah, that almost opens up to it isn't the equivalent, but it's almost like a sequence of life risk you're introducing, that not upgrading, is that going to be something you regret? Because timing-wise, that ends up being the only time you could have done it, and you just don't have another opportunity to do it. And what have you robbed from yourself, memory and emotionally and joy-wise, that, you know, you were driven to the decision not to upgrade the cabin because of this volatility that's going on, that is just one more year gone of your go-go period. And I hope you have plenty of them, because otherwise you might regret what you just did.
Because my friends, we promote life living and having money for fun. We tried to shame the couple who didn't want to sell assets to upgrade, because they have the cheaper room on the river cruise. And we told them, you have enough money to upgrade to a better room so other people in the community that have less assets can get that room. And it's so we were trying to say, you have enough assets to bump up so other people with less assets can join us, because there's only so many rooms on a little river cruise ship. So they will get the experience, but they're keeping someone else who doesn't have the same level of means in our friend community, not my Slacker friends. They're outside of that community. But so you could see where, as a community, which I'm really big on now, can help other community members if they're farther down the path into retirement, years in retirement, with experience of finances, experience of safety. And so it's not just about my and my wife's plan of record. It's also how our plan of record can help those around us enjoy their situations. So it's kind of a circular reference in a wonderful way in most cases.
You did make me smile / cringe when you said you tried to shame them.
But they don't spend. They're extremely frugal, and they don't really need to be for some of these smaller things. So we're saying you've held back the opportunity for someone else in your community. And we would never do that unless they were very well funded.
Okay. Yeah. You don't want to shame people. All right.
You poke them a little. You could motivate people a little.
Okay. Well, we would never shame. We can't shame. All right. But what I wanted to get to, because we believe in, again, trying to help people overcome the emotional hurdle, not just the timing hurdle of when you retire and the sequence of return risks, but the emotional hurdle or life hurdle, if you will, as Chris just mentioned. So I came up with that concept. You probably heard of it, minimum dignity floor. You repeated it last week. And Roger uses base great life. What other approaches have you heard of? And how does base great life and minimum dignity floor, those two ideas, how do they fit in? Do you see people utilizing one of the two, coming up with their own approach? And it's just a way to prioritize expenses is what it's trying to do. At least that's my concept of minimum dignity floor. It prioritizes expenses into those that every human needs, irrespective of how long they live. And then those that you don't need, but you want. So needs and wants, and I just ran with it and called it minimum dignity floor in honor of the woman I bought strawberries for many, many, many years ago that changed my life. How do you use those two ideas, or the group use those two ideas, and you as a retirement coach, what have you seen between those ideas or others?
There's not a lot of visibility for the structured minimum dignity floor or base great life needs type approach that's out there in the media. Then people search for a retirement spending article, they're going to get this 4% safe withdrawal rule of thumb, and then they're going to get these other calculations that say 3.3% or 2.75%, or now it's jumping up to 4.3% based off of the past 6 months of fixed asset returns. And so it gets real crazy on that. And the whole 4% rule of thumb is where so many people focus on actually living in that structure if they don't have a plenty of professionals probably follow some of that structure, but that's a good rule of thumb, I think, to decide if you're funded well enough for retirement, a standard target, you know, the first target, like you say, get on the target. That's to me the 4% rule. And we don't have to talk about that because they can read papers from the 90s if they wanted to, but no one's going to do that. And then your approach, which is a safety type approach, for the minimum needs, you've talked about that. Roger Whitney's takes your minimum approach and he adds a little more life comforts, calls it base great life. So it's a base amount for a great life, which might include a second car or eating out once a week, maybe some travel that people really want to do to have a great life. Sometimes people say, you know what, I really want a house cleaner or I want a massage so that I can actually move around. And Roger will include that in his base great life of this is really how you want to live, not get by because you have no other assets and just survive. I like the survival mode of minimum dignity floor to know that when I calculated food, utility, transportation, housing, and healthcare, I'm just looking at a spreadsheet right now, so I know what those terms are. I know that based on my, I've tracked our spending, I said, since high school, when I was in high school and then with my wife. So I know what our spending has been and how it's shifted. Some things go up, some things go down. It's pretty interesting. And Roger has a little better life built in. And so you kind of get a feel for, if you're a money person, if you're a saver person, you know what your life costs. And then you project out to the future, which is the weird thing, the unknown longevity of this. And then you start calculating, well, what is inflation going to be? And what's my return going to be? Or what's the return going to be? And what inflation is going to eat into that? And that stuff gets real complicated. And for a young retiree, I call the young retirees people with a five at the beginning of their age or lower. You have no idea what's going to happen out in the future. So by having a structure that you, Roger calls it, I love this, he calls it agile retirement. So you kind of set it up and then you just keep an eye on it. You talked a couple of weeks ago about not doing a plan necessarily every year, but every couple years, every few years, doing a check-in to see if you're tracking near what you said your client's previous plan was. And I like that. With a spreadsheet geek, we do that every quarter or every 6 months or on our spreadsheet. So we track to that. And that gives you confidence to see how you're projecting. If the line's going crazy down and your money's going down, then you just adjust. And the ability to adjust is feasible for people, I think, who've saved. Like Chris said, if you're just getting by and trying to make ends meet and find other income, that's a whole different structure. And honestly,
well, what do you mean they adjust? See, that's when you said that, my ears perked up. So markets are going down, you adjust.
I think you would adjust. That's a great question, because Kevin Lyles gave me a very hard time on this, because I mentioned in the club that I rounded down our account balances a little bit and put them into the MoneyGuide Pro calculator just to be safe in case things went down. And he said, that's not accurate. You need to track it from where it is today, because over history, it's done this perspective. And so I got in trouble for that. But I sure felt better rounding down and knowing I had a buffer, especially right now. But that does not apply if following your, I'm assuming your position one of cash for multiple years, your Roger's position one of 3 years for his cake layer for the next 5 years, his position. Or if you do the three bucket strategy, if your first 3 to 5 years is in bucket one, that's not invested to be volatile. So the flexibility is just to make sure it plans out for the future, longer term, for the extra things. Roger calls it needs as the base, wants are the good stuff, wishes are the dreams. I think you said you have the minimum dignity floor. The other examples you gave were the set-asides for aging. What'd you combine? Buffer you combined recently? You guys tune your process. So your process is agile in the model. And so, and then on top of that, you guys have the fun. You said the fun vision was known targeted spending for fun things. That's kind of like the wants. Needs are your base. The wants are your good stuff. And the wishes are like the dreams, which is the total fun number that you have that, well, the way I did it was not assigned to the the known, oh, we're going to spend $2,000 a year on U.S. travel just to see friends or family. So it's kind of that structure of I think I'm safety first versus total return living of the portfolio returns this and you stay between guardrails. And the guardrails, honestly, to me, makes a lot of sense. But I'm 54, so I'm past my mathematical peak. And for listeners, even though I'm young, still young in my mind, things don't process as well as they used to. It gets more complicated trying to do guardrails and super optimize in my mind. So I like it a little simpler. And I do like it kind of simple with the structure. And luckily we spend and have saved at that rate that we can make it simpler.
I think what you shared, and Chris, please chime in if you'd like, but from what I picked up from Kevin, you're saying in your group, there's some who practice our way. Sounds like the majority practice Roger's way, obviously. There's some that do the safe withdrawal rate. But you're saying that everyone seems to have some, at least portion of their assets in a time-segmented strategy, whether it's traditional bucketing, my spending positions, or Roger's approach of, I think you said, 3 years in some sort of cash-like reserve. That's how you guys handled the tariff tantrum. That's what helped give a little bit of peace of mind, at least for the most part. And that's what I was trying to get an idea of, what you find people doing as a whole. Because I'm glad you mentioned a few things, but the big takeaway I got is I seem to see that everybody was building some type of buffer, for lack of a better term. And I don't mean buffer in the sense of a buffered ETF. I'm talking about a buffer, some sort of spending reserve based on some sound calculations, whichever approach that may be, in an effort to handle, yes, sequence of return risk, but also the emotional risk of spending when markets are dropping. So I was pleased to hear that. A couple of things that I wanted to clarify, though, on with our approach, and you might have picked up on it, Chris, we definitely believe in isolating your minimum dignity floor, but we also acknowledge as you age, you mentioned you're 54, you probably know statistically speaking, after age 53, the part of your brain that understands financial concepts is beginning to degrade. It's not a cliff, or you'd be dumb as a brick right now. But you've acknowledged at least that, hey, this isn't going to get easier. I'm not going to get younger, stronger, and healthier. And part of what I strive to do, and I would encourage any listener, whether you're going to embrace our approach to retirement planning, Rogers, the safe withdrawal rate for the 4% rule, as they call it, the guardrail approach, the ceiling and floor approach, which are offshoots of the safe withdrawal rate, whichever way you're going to project your retirement, don't look at it through the eyes of someone in their 50s and 60s. You are going to hand the older you a nightmare in many of these approaches to retirement planning. I have often said retirement planning is nothing more than a promise to the older you for permission from the older you. And the promise you're going to give the older you is that they're taken care of as they age, as they become feeble, as their brain power cannot comprehend like it does now. I know it's always going to happen to someone else, the other guy. It's never going to be you. I get that. But what if it is, or what if you're helping, like Kevin helps people as a retirement coach? What if you're helping people who are the other guy? I just feel strongly and passionately it's the younger you responsibility to put something in place that's going to be easier for the older you to do. This notion that you're going to be able to update your plan or massage it or whatever you're going to call it forever. In your 80s and 90s, you're going to be, going on Zoom, and you're not going to go into offices anymore in your 80s and 90s. You're going to be on whatever medium of communication exists in another 20 or 30 years, and you're going to be as sharp as a tack at 92 listening about your investments. That's just pure BS. You need to put something easy in place, and it's part of the reason we came up with our entire approach to retirement planning. So to borrow on that, Kevin, you once said the 4% rule hurts your brain and heart. And I never quite understood what you meant by that, but I think perhaps it's what I was going with here. A total return safe withdrawal rate is not an approach to retirement planning, in my opinion, that ages well. It gets more and more complex as the older and older you get. Now, some will argue, no, it doesn't, Jim. You're closer and closer to death. It's going to get easier. What I mean is it gets harder and harder and harder for the older you to understand it and understand what's going on. So what did you mean, though, that the 4% rule hurts your brain and your heart?
So I think what that is that on my brain side, I could simply do the 4% at the beginning, but I can't count on a third. It's based off a 30-year study of the worst 30-year rolling cycle since whatever, the 20s. And it also was a 50-50 and then a 75-30 or 75, that would be funny, 75-25% allocation, depending if you look at the Trinity study or Bill Bengen and all this stuff. And you could, so even if I don't have that exact allocation and that exact history, it doesn't really apply to me. It's just a rule of thumb. The first year makes sense. Then you increment each year by the previous year's amount plus an inflation adjustment. It doesn't reset at 4% each year. It's just from year one. And so that's kind of a brain thing you're messing with, all these incremental adjustments that's supposed to solve your spending every from the first year based off of worst case through the rest of your life, which I don't want to live my life. That's my heart part, is off of the worst possible case of history, because I think things are going to be better than history in many ways. I don't know if the returns hopefully are better than the worst 30-year period in history. So why base my plan on that? Why not have a safe structure with some set-asides and buffer and some fun built into that? I love the strategy. And I think you said it last week where you spend for a normal retiree, I guess we'll go normal 65 to 95, we'll say, or 85, maybe 95, where to spend 70-ish, you said more than I think, of your fun number early in retirement in your go-go years when you can build these memories and have those memories with you. If you're on the 4% rule, you're living as a minimum on a worst case for those years. And then all of a sudden you're going to be 10 years older, 10 years closer to end of plan, and probably realize your accounts did better in those 10 years. I was retired in 2014, and in 2020, that's when I decided to have the roaring 20s. And it was great for the first 2 months of January, February, and then March, everything stopped. And I thought, wow, this is weird. And so it shows you that even though you decide to make an attempt, in our case, 6 years into my retirement, 9 years into my wife's, to make it where we're older than we were when we started, which is smarter and safer when you're 50 to do that. But we started to spend and all of a sudden the world stopped, literally stopped. The streets had no people on them on the news. Like I don't know if anyone's ever seen that before. And so I was thankful we weren't 70s when that happened and had to reset or pause that. So that's the heart part of not being able to live your best life. And the frameworks here, I want to use the word freedom. The frameworks, if you build these frameworks, they give you an extra freedom to spend, a freedom to spend, but also an extra freedom if you've saved and have this money, some money set aside for the fun, or in Roger's case, the wishes, which are the dreams, and you can do some of those, but those take action. And I'm a big believer in taking action and not just saying we can. Sometimes just saying you can feels really good with money. You could buy any car you want because you've saved for 30 years and you deferred all that spending till now. But like you said, Jim, deferred spending, when is that deferral date? Do you want that deferral date to be when you're 82 and realize, wow, everything's been good? The whole Debbie Downer thing. I mean, all of that stuff resonates with people I know, people in their 50s and even people in their 40s who think about this. They think about balance and they think about being agile. And if we're going to spend a little bit now, let's just keep an eye on things. They're not going to overspend, these saver people I know. So that's why 4%, just the fixed rate at worst possible case based on history, does not make sense to me, but I'm cautious as well.
No, I will say, first of all, it was Chris, and I'll let him chime in. He's the one who convinced me on spending far more of your fun number. Once we discovered the fun number, I was counseling people to spend about half of it and save the rest. And he tore into me, friendly. He wasn't mean. And he's totally changed my mindset. So, Chris, I'm going to let you opine on that in 1 second. The thing that I want to point out, what always bothered me with the safe withdrawal rate approach to retirement planning, and at least it's evolved to the sense that many advisors now are doing the guardrail approach. So it does allow, it's still bound by the safe withdrawal rate, but they allow for a more flexible increase in spending at a greater consistency than you normally would under the safe withdrawal rate. So they're going to monitor your portfolio value, and if it starts to grow to a certain level, they're going to call you up and say, hey, you can start spending more money. And if it drops to a certain level, like with the tariff tantrum, they may get a hold of you and say, hey, you got to spend a little less money. So they're going to stay a little bit more involved and try to help overcome, to me, the biggest issue I've always had with the safe withdrawal rate. And at least I give the guardrails credit. I still don't prefer it. It's not my chosen way for retirement. But my issue with the safe withdrawal rate, folks, and Kevin in particular, is it unnecessarily curtails spending on fun early in retirement. This notion that you can't spend more than 4% of your wealth on something fun, I just don't get that. It never sat with me. And I think it came from 9 years as a police officer meeting the other guy day in and day out. And way back then, I used to pull OT all the time, folks. I literally was working 7 days a week. And I did it because I knew I was going to move to Colorado. I had to save as much money as I could. So I literally came across the other guy day in and day out. And I never forgot that, and all the stories on just 9 short years as a police officer. It just never resonated when I tried to go into retirement planning. And everybody knows the 78-year-old woman who couldn't afford strawberries, and I bought them for her, and it just changed my life. I tried to deal with that, Kevin, through this concept of minimum dignity floor covered with lifetime guaranteed secure income. But when I approached fun, this notion that I'm going to tell someone, well, you can't spend more than X number of dollars on fun this year. I always thought that's silly because next year you could be the other guy. So I came up with the concept of, well, let's try to quantify this spending needs, because whatever dollars are left after you take care of food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare expenses, after you decide how are you going to approach aging and long-term care for your particular situation, and how are you going to incorporate liquid assets, illiquid assets, future inheritances, all those elements that go into an LTC plan, if you're going to embrace insurance, if you're going to pass off some of that risk. But once you take care of that, once you take care of a special needs child, if you have one, once you establish your buffer and reserve, the only spending left, listeners and Kevin, is your discretionary fund. Let's just quantify that. Let's try to come up with what that is in dollars, not percentages, dollars. Don't tell someone you can only spend 4%. Most people couldn't tell you what 4% of 1,000 is. And you tell me they're going to be able to spend 4% of their retirement? They're not going to know how to do the math. Instead, why don't you just tell people, hey, out of all your savings, you can spend, in our opinion, X amount on fun. Then I used to say, spend half of it now and half of it later. Chris changed my mind on that. Chris, why don't you share your thoughts on that? Because I totally believe in your approach now of, which is what Kevin picked up on, of spending 65, 70, 75-ish percent on your go-go. Mm-hmm. Now, well, not literally this second, yeah. But you know what I mean.
Well, I think the thing to remember is that thing that we call the fund number is a lump sum amount of your current assets today that could be dedicated to fun over your life. It's kind of the concept of the total fund number, that hopefully large number, 800,000, $1 million, $1.5 million that maybe you've saved that isn't needed for the other things you've prioritized. It's available. And the reason I say you should consider spending 70 plus percent of that during your go-go period is really twofold. It's the early years. It's that early, if we take a typical retirement in your mid-60s, it's that first 10 to 15 years is kind of the range that you are still energetic, physically able, mentally interested to go do things that cost money. And what I've seen looking at this point, hundreds, if not thousands of plans, is that what takes the dollars is international travel or expensive hobbies. That's it. That's pretty much it. I'm sure someone could think of some other random thing, but international travel, and to include, I'd put cruises in that, even if you're not technically international, but high-end travel, we'll call it, and expensive hobbies. Once those stop, which is typically going to be somewhere in your 80s, once those kind of stop, a lot of the fund spending that costs significant dollars goes away. So there's that built-in kind of greater need early in a retirement for more dollars. Later on, the fund you have is typically more mundane, if you will, from the perspective of a 55 or 65-year-old, where it's not a lot less physically demanding. It's more socializing with friends, card games, dinner out, things like that, which certainly costs money, but not like a cruise or international travel to Asia or something like that. So there's that aspect of it. But secondly, remember, the dollars that you are going to carve off for later, if they're going to be for your slow-go period in 15 years, those dollars have 15 years to grow before you're touching them. So you really don't have to set aside that much, because two things are happening. Those dollars have grown and the need has declined at that point, because you're at the end of your go-go period. And then the no-go period later on is, you know, usually very inexpensive for most people when it comes to a fund. You know, basic domestic travel, usually over the road, maybe to visit friends and things like that. It's more regionalized typically. And then you have social activities and hanging out with friends and things that also is not typically super expensive. So that's what kind of drew me to the idea that, you know, you should really go and target maybe 70%, maybe more in some cases, to that go-go period, that first 10 to 15 years. That's when the vast majority of that fund number dollars you have could be actually useful to do the type of fund you would want to do that costs, you know, above average money, we'll call it. So that's kind of what brought me around to that. But always remember that that fund number isn't a kind of an allocation. It's not your total spending. It's the assets that are available to support spending. So that 20% maybe that you reserve for the slow-go period, that sounds like a small amount. Oh, gee, only 20% for my slow-go? I'm not going to be that slow. Yeah, but you've got 12, 15 years for it to grow. before you need it. So it's actually going to transform into greater spending than it otherwise might appear, as long as you, you know, get a return above inflation. It's going to buy you more than just 20% would appear in today's terms. So we have that whole time value of money thing that plays a part in this whole conversation too. So that's what brought me around to kind of that 70% thing, which I pitched successfully to Jim.
We also have, Chris and Kevin, the time value of life. Mm-hmm. I know the younger you is here. I don't meet with clients directly anymore, but when I did, I would talk to them that way. I know the younger you is here. I'm sitting there looking at them, talking to them. I don't know if the older you is going to be here. You can save that money, the fun money, for the older you. But I think the older you would actually appreciate memories and experiences more than dollars in the bank, because dollars in the bank don't mean they're going to be able to go and spend it. Because again, it's always going to be the other guy. I get that, folks. But some things can happen to you where you're not going to be able to spend those dollars. And my dad called them Debbie Downers. And he shared with me that those were people in his retirement community who had money but could not spend it. He said they were the worst people to be around. And he told me once, don't let your customers, he called them, but he meant clients, don't let your customers be Debbie Downers. And it's always stuck with me. And it's always been something that Chris and myself and all our employees have strived to help people do, spend their money on fun. Put enough aside that the older you is going to be able to do some things, but encourage people to spend on fun. So Kevin, you understand our MDF concept. You understand our fun number concept. So I don't know how many people in the Rock Retirement Club or in your little network that you help people with, but if people approach it with the safe withdrawal rate, hopefully they're at least spending whatever their annual safe withdrawal rate is, because they're going to be sent that money. Here's that money, you know, go spend it. Hopefully they're doing that. But our approach is different. We don't send out a certain amount of money. We give you a budget. And we just encourage you to go spend it. So for people who fall into that category, Kevin, do you actually have to help coach them to spend from that guilt-free? I mean, I call it permission. You're going to give a promise to the old you that your minimum dignity floor is taken care of. In return, the old you is going to give you permission to spend on fun. Even with that permission, do you feel psychologically people still have a hard time spending on fun? I mean, this is intriguing for me because you're working with people in a different realm than I do. What have you seen?
Yes, savers don't turn into spenders. I don't know when that happens, if that happens, but yes, people who've saved are not inherently spenders. And it's fair to say the Rock Retirement Club is self-selected people who are willing to pay money to join a club. So you've already got people who are willing to spend money to join a club, which means they probably have the resources, a better resource level than the average, even the median, I don't know, all kinds of levels of people. But you said you both talked about so many things, and Jim, your structure's fantastic for when my friends and I, because we talk more closely about numbers strategy, not really numbers, but so we talk about that. The club talks about, you know, paths and walking paths with people and of similar paths. I just went, well, my wife and I went on a cruise with our friends. There were seven of us on a 32-day cruise to Australia and New Zealand. Like Chris said, a big spending item. And we were kind of shocked because we were by far the youngest people on the ship. And my friend realized, well, one, that's because other people our age are working and because they didn't have the deferred spending like we had all put aside. But two, our experience on the ship seemed to be more. It was more of an experience. When we got to each port, many of the people, it was 500 people on the ship, small ship, and there were dozens and dozens and dozens of people in their upper 80s, early 90s with the scooters they ride around on, or walkers or canes, that were just, they were out exploring the world, but at a much slower, less agile pace. And when we would get to ports, most people would get on the little bus and drive around the sites, maybe get off once at a main site and then go back to the ship. We would rent mountain bikes and ride mountain bikes across New Zealand for a couple hours. And then we would go walk through the town and explore. So we were getting different types of memories because of our age and ability. And part of that was because we were willing to spend and do these adventures. And so we don't naturally spend on these activities, especially large items. But when you, like I said, you surround yourself last week with people who are motivating you and of the same mindset, and let's live and do things together, and we have a social community and we all have memories together, that helps a lot. And the Rock Retirement Club started doing adventures. They just said 2023 in June, we're going to do a week-long cruise in Alaska, and 60 Rock Retirement Club members joined the cruise and did Alaska together. They're doing a river cruise. So even within the club, one guy said, I'm hiking Kilimanjaro, and I have two open spots. Does anyone want to join me, our group? And within a day, he had people from the club joining. So when you have opportunities to do things with others that you enjoy being around or think you would enjoy being around, that helps. And the same thing in the club is people talk about retirement lifestyles and talk about money and setting aside money. And you don't talk about that with people in real life, but in a club situation where other people have the same interest, it's easier to have those discussions. And so I think you see that ability to do things and possibly spend on things. And I started a thread in the club, and it was called Share Your Splurge, where people could share something that they splurged on. And some people redid their summer room in their house, or they got a jacuzzi, or someone got a sports car, or someone went to Australia and they have a koala. She's holding a koala bear. So we do try to share your splurge, and it's all different levels of funding, because so many of those people said, I would have never done that. And I think it has to do with community in that sense too.
Interesting. So you find that community and groupthink, or you said, can't remember if it was this week or last week where you shamed somebody into trying to spend, that one of the ways you help overcome for savers, and I agree with you, anecdotally speaking, we see it in our office, savers have a difficult time spending, and they spend their entire life amassing the wealth when it comes time to actually trying to spend it, even though they know it's deferred spending. Even though they're very smart and intelligent people, and they know when they pass away, someone's going to inherit it, and that person will end up spending it, or that entity will spend it, or the hog, as you said, the heirs, the organizations, or the government will spend it.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but also that goes with giving. I've seen my multiple communities, my Slacker friends, the Rock Retirement Club, and the FI community talk about when they're sharing with others and giving to others and creating scholarships for young people to join financial independence retreats, and they start Kickstarters. And so they're even leading in the spending for others, to others, and giving. So I don't want to say it's all self-centered. I've seen tens of thousands of dollars get raised to help people go to events that are younger to try to help them, or struggling, or women's meetups or retreats. So even that giving side is community-based that helps motivate people. So it's fascinating to me. And they're giving now where they can see it helping others. Even people in their 40s and 50s are doing that earlier. And I should have said that earlier. I just didn't even think about it. But so many different ways to take your assets and flow them out of those account numbers into the world for yourself, for those around you, or for your community sharing. It's fascinating to see, and it motivates you to want to do some of that, I think.
Okay, it's peer pressure.
Not pressure,
in a good
peer
way.
Opportunity.
Peer support, yeah.
Peer support. Oh, I like that much better, Chris, peer support. Because, I mean, I'm intrigued by this because I would love for the people, we seem, Chris, in our office, people who definitely could spend and don't, and people who probably shouldn't be spending who are. And I think what that ties into is that there's some people who have spent their entire lives are so comfortable spending, they want to keep spending. And we may crunch the numbers and realize you can't keep spending at these levels, but they can't shut it off. Conversely, there's people who hardly ever spent, and now they're retired, and we're trying to get them to turn it on. So I think a lot of it has to do with their experience or their upbringing, if you will, during their working years. You've had people who spent way beyond their means during their working years, and they carry those bad traits into retirement. We see that. And then, of course, like I said, we see people who skimped and saved diligently, invested well, managed the money on their own, kept their expenses and fees low, indexed for the most part, and amassed wealth. And they have the opposite. They have the hard time trying to turn the spending on. So I like this community support to help encourage you to spend. And maybe listeners who are sitting and saying, gee, I wish I could bring myself to do that. I'm not saying you have to join the Rock Retirement Club, but maybe if you were to immerse yourself a little bit more into some social settings where you may find that community support to encourage you to go out and do things could help allow you to feel comfortable spending. We can talk to you ad nauseum day in and day out, two times a week, trying to explain to you how to project your retirement, the concept of the fund number, the minimum dignity floor, secure income, investment positioning, see-through portfolio, all the concepts and phrases that we have coined. We can do a lot of this to help quantify if you can spend on fun. And if you do get the green light and you're given your fun number, where we struggle, Kevin and Chris, is helping those people who can spend on fun but still aren't, getting them to feel comfortable doing it. And I just realized after doing this for so long, there is no simple answer for that. I like this community support concept as Chris worded it, peer pressure, as I said, but community support sounds so much more politically correct. This community support approach and what the Rock Retirement Club tries to do. I also agree, as you said, Kevin, the people who are in the Rock Retirement Club are not the norm. They're more of an anomaly. They're the people who have the free cash flow, have the desire to spend it, to join a group of peers. But it could be something that our listeners can learn from, that community involvement and community support could help possess you to start spending on fun before it gets too late. I remember having a client who was in her early 80s, who was a widower, and she started wanting to do the traveling that she never did. And I've talked about her in the past, because I jokingly call what she did a rent-a-friend. She had no family. After her husband died, she had no children. They didn't have children. And her friends were limited. So what she did is she hired somebody from the senior center. As she told me, a younger woman, she said, and this is years ago, and I was thinking a younger woman, well, it was a 73-year-old woman. 73-year-old woman to an 82-year-old woman is a younger woman. And she hired a woman. I called her the rent-a-friend. And she paid her a wage and her way. And they went on cruises, Kevin. And she started to be able to do the things that she couldn't do them alone. And she knew that. She needed someone to help her. And as she told me, she says, what am I going to do, Jim? Just die with the money? It took her to 82 to start to be able to feel comfortable to spend. And at that point, again, she did a rent-a-friend. So I don't think there's any easy answer, folks. And I know I'm rambling now. But this is one of the things that is a challenge for us and for me personally. I think I have a really attuned approach to retirement planning, but you can lead a horse to the water, but you can't make the horse drink it. And we can show people that you can spend these dollars, but we can't force them to spend it. And that's where you come in, Kevin, or others like you, who can hopefully coach people into understanding it's okay to spend these dollars. Not everybody's going to be able to do it. We concede that. Our approach to retirement planning is not for everyone. For those, it does work. Go ahead, Kevin.
I want to say something, and I probably should have shared this earlier, is we're talking about money because this is the retirement IRA show. But there's a huge side of retirement that's the non-financial side. It's where the 90-10% model shifts, and we're talking about spending money, and we'll probably be close to wrapping up. So I want to share this perspective of what I see is generally someone is you are who you are in retirement as you were before retirement. It's not a magic light switch you talked about. If you were an active person before retirement, you're an active person in retirement. If you're curious, you're the same. If you're cautious before retirement, you're going to be cautious in retirement. You could be anxious in before and after. You could be laid back. You have the opportunity to become a new you at any time. It's not like retirement, it just happens. You have to put the work in to do that, whether you're those personality traits, or whether you're a saver to become a spender, or you're a spender that's going to become a saver. You've talked about the tax planning window. Like, that's a total spreadsheet geek world of your tax planning before you turn on your social capital with pensions or Social Security. But that delay period that you've talked about, I like that term, because there's phases of cash flow in retirement, and that when people talk about the 4% rule, they don't talk about it shifting when you get Social Security turned on. It's like a one and done setting. And so look at who you are. Look at who you dream about being at some point. It doesn't have to be right at retirement. It could be before retirement. And a lot of retirement's non-financial, especially for people listening to a numbers show, a money show. It's more about the life and what do you want to enjoy and who do you want to enjoy that with and how do you want to enjoy that with and do you want to share that enjoyment with others around you or in organizations that you believe in? Because you talked on the last show about taxes, giving it passing away, leaving a Roth to charity, leave the IRA so they get dollar for dollar, not post-tax dollars. But part of this can be doing some of that while you're still alive and giving with the warm hand rather than the cold hand. All these pieces I see from members in the club giving and sharing and helping and reinventing themselves and reinventing before retirement. When you surround yourself with people who are trying to better themselves and others, it kind of rubs off on you, and it's not all planning your three types of accounts or your taxes or your secure tool, secure two strategy or your trust. There's so much more. So I wanted to say non-financial retirement planning is huge. And that was the goal.
Yeah, I think something good for people to strive for is to get a handle on the 10% on the financial part so that you can focus on the 90%. Because I think people get stuck on the 10%. If they don't address it, if they don't come up with a plan for it, they'll never make it past that. And then the 90% doesn't get the focus that it needs and warrants. So there's, you know, an argument, if I've ever heard it, for financial planning, retirement planning, is do what it takes to get a plan in place so that you feel like you've got a grasp on and a comfort level with the 10% financial piece, because you got a whole bunch of other stuff to worry about that, and worry, I guess might be the wrong word, a lot of other things to focus on that can be so rewarding and helpful and transformative that, you know, you want to get past that 10% to the best degree that you can. So, Jim, any passing
thoughts?
Nobody's
picking up on that. Say what, Chris?
Yeah. Any last thoughts before we wrap up?
Well, I was trying to be polite and let Kevin chime in, but he didn't say anything.
I did want to say that as I was thinking about talking with you guys, I don't know if you're the first planners that actually used the word fun and secure in their retirement plan at the same time. And I think that's a big deal, to be secure, to allow the fun. Those two words don't usually come across from the financial podcasters, blog people that I hear. And that's exceptional. And I want to thank you for using those two words.
Well, you know, I'm going to end with this story then that we haven't shared in a long time, because it's how we came up with the name and used secure in there. When I was working, Chris has just started with me. I think you had been on for maybe a year, Chris, maybe two, I don't know. And the concept of what we have now was starting to take shape. The minimum dignity floor was always there. Secure income was always there. Fund number was still a long way away. And I wanted to name the process. Do you remember the original name, Chris, that got shot down?
Yes, it was either you. I think you wanted to. You started with worry free, and then you thought, well, maybe since that compliance shot that down, we went to worry less as we started to make our way through the naming process. But wasn't it worry free?
You were close. You were more close to the second one. So what happened, Kevin, is at the time I had an outsourced compliance department. I was a IAR, investment advisor representative. Jim Solomon and Associates didn't even exist. So I had to get everything approved by an outside compliance counsel. And I wanted to call the approach, which again, at the time was just pretty much minimum dignity floor with secure income. I wanted to call it worryless retirement planning process.
Yeah, that's right. You pitched it as worryless, and then they came back and said it sounded too much like worry-free, and that's not going to fly. So that,
well, yeah, so you're correct. And they came back, but this is a true story, Kevin. They came back, and the compliance people would not let me put that on my website or in any advertising. Worryless, the one word, worryless. And they said, you can't do that. If you tell somebody, I'll never forget this. If you tell somebody that it's worryless, or then, how did they put it? It was something about someone is always going to worry about something. And he mentioned to me and said, what if their dog died? I'll just always remember that. What if their dog died? And they're worrying about that. And you told them that they weren't going to worry. I kid you not. So I came back and I took the word worryless, and I thought I'd be cute. Mm-hmm. And I put a dash in where you're going to worry, but worry dash less. And I sent it off. And he shot that down.
Exactly.
And then I went to Chris and I was like, Chris, They won't take worry-free. They won't take worry-less. They won't take worry-less. And it's Chris who said, well, why don't we try the word secure? Because if they do this, they can be secure in the knowledge, or something like that. Chris, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Secure in the knowledge that their minimum dignity floor is taken care of. And I remember telling Chris, if they're not going to take worry-free, worry-less, and worry-less, they're not going to take secure. But I sent it in.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise.
And they took it. Yeah. They had no problem with it.
Yeah.
So we created the secure retirement income process. And it kind of lends itself in, and maybe that's how you came up with it, Chris, because of my passionate belief, Kevin, in secure income. Lifetime streams of guaranteed income, whether it's through the optimization of pensions for those who have them, the optimization of Social Security, or the purchase of an income annuity. And longtime listeners of the show know we generally favor single premium immediate annuities, the simplest, purest form of annuity. Irrespective of how you're going to come up with this secure income, if you could go through the rest of your life, I always thought, no matter how long you live, there's no expiration date printed on our forehead or stamped on our hiney when we're born. We don't know when we're going to be the other guy. And because of that unknown, it lent itself, Kevin, into, in my opinion, people's reluctance to spend because they didn't know if they would need it later. And I just always loved the concept of a bottomless cup of coffee when I used to go out for breakfast with my father and they'd put that carafe on your table or the waitress would just come by with a piping hot pot of coffee. No matter how long we sat there talking, that coffee always stayed full and hot and plentiful. And I thought, why can't you enter retirement with that same security, if you will, of knowing I'm going to have coffee no matter how long I sit here having breakfast with my dad. So it's all these little things that happened in my life and your life and everybody's life that influenced the people we become. And in my case, it influenced the retirement planner that I became. But we brought the word secure in, Kevin, quite accidentally. Or it would have been worry-free, worry-less, or worry-less long before secure.
I don't know if people would buy into a worry-less. That sounds like a product, whereas secure sounds like a structure. And I think I know a lot of people in the club talk about the bottomless pot of coffee. We see that sometimes. And I think that's interesting because it's both extremes. It's that people need in the retirement because everybody always worry. And Jim, you talk about it, but I don't know if you've experienced this. When there's no paycheck, I say that's a gut check because mm-hmm. that does not feel good for the first months at a time, no matter how you structure your checking account to pay the bills. It's just not right after decades of receiving a deposit every 2 weeks.
Yeah, I have not experienced that yet, but I've freely admitted on this show, I do this for a living, but I can guarantee you when the firm does pass on and I, even though I might still be associated with it to some degree or another, it's going to freak me out as well. Anyways, Chris and Kevin, it's been great. Hopefully our listeners, this is a different approach, different kind of shows that we did for the last two EDU shows. I hope people found it interesting. I'll let you two, if you let me go, especially since I went down memory lane now to, you're right, Chris, it started worry-free, then worry-less, then worry-less. This little memory, I can go on and on about this, and I don't want to, so I'm going to hand it off to you guys to wrap up, or we'll be recording for another 3 hours.
It's all good. I'm glad we had Kevin on. So thanks a lot, Kevin, for agreeing to come on. We might hit you up for another topic at some point in the future, because I think you, like us, and I joke with our clients all the time that whether you're working with us or someone else, you learn to be retired kind of vicariously through others. And a good role, I believe, of a retirement planner is to absorb as much as they can from the retirees that they work with and they learn from so that they can then spread the wealth and pass it on. There's all kinds of little nuggets of wisdom, I'll call it, that I freely admit I've stolen, that I've gained from other clients, and then I share with clients that maybe have similar situations or they're facing similar struggles and things like that. So I think it's great that there's this community like the Rock Retirement Club where there's a lot of benefit to everyone trying things out and learning and sharing and that sort of thing, because everybody gets one time to retire. They get one time to do it. So you can't practice it. You don't get, everybody'd nail it by about the 10th time, but you only get to do it once. So you're going to have to learn from others who have done it successfully and apply what's appropriate to yourself. So kudos to the club and to the work that you do and being willing to share on, this podcast and others. So thanks a lot for coming on. Hopefully we didn't offend you too much in any way, so you wouldn't consider coming back, but.
I do want to thank Jake and Jacob for being on the shows lately, because giving their perspectives of the process really help me and my friends get it from a little bit different angle. Sometimes you hear things from a different perspective, and I think that's really good. I'm surprised Jim called me by my name the whole time. That was fantastic.
That you should feel very special, Kevin. No, wait, Jim, be careful what you're about to say, where you're going to call him Greg.
I screwed up right at the last minute once when I called Peter Paul right at the last minute and lost a $50 bet to Bob. Yeah. But every time you talk, Zoom shows me your name, so I just can see it. So it's cheating, but I didn't screw up your name.
Thank you guys for all you do. And there's so many people that have a different perspective that now have this fun number freedom piece in their plan that is very different from some yearly allocation. It's you can't explain it to people who've been able to build some of your structure into their own lives. And I'm sure they're enjoying more because of all the effort you put in.
Well, I think the big news will be, and we haven't even talked about it on the show, but Bill Benjamin is coming out with a book, I believe in June, so he's not too far away. His new safe withdrawal rate is 4.7. So he explains in the book how he came up with that.
Well, good thing, because the one percenters can start taking their fee out of there. They'll change to the 0.7 percenters, so you can still keep your four.
But, it's a 20% increase almost.
Yeah.
But it's still, again, in my humble opinion, unnecessarily curtail spending on fun during your go-go phase of life. And I just don't believe in that at all. But anyways, guys, thanks for everything. And we'll be back with you all next week. And Kevin, definitely keep in touch. And we'd love to bring you back on someday in the future.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Kevin. And everybody else, take care, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.